Hello and welcome into this edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Hi there, Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host for this hour of observation, insight, and absurdity. On a Wednesday, the 8th day of April, 2020, in the midst of the coronavirus lockdown. It's a lockdown. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it's been a weird week so far. I got to tell you, it's been a busy week for yours truly. I've been elsewhere, unable to actually do full podcasts. I did try to drop a little something in the last couple of days just to say hi. Hi, you. But I've been busy. I was over at the Dawson Now Studios both days. There was a webinar one day, and we're gearing up over there. We're gearing up over at the Dawson Now Studios for doing YouTube broadcasts, live feeds to YouTube, Facebook, you name it. We're talking about doing that. And the beginning of that has happened. There's been a couple of cameras put in place. The computer has been dedicated to handling all of the switching duties, and the interface between the studios and the web is coming into shape. And so Monday on the webcast, we put it all to work, and we learned what we still need to do. And so there's still a little bit more work that needs to happen, a little tweaking, a little adjusting, but things are coming along nicely. A couple of really nice Blackmagic cameras, a couple of some nice equipment, and the image is awesome. And it's a vast improvement over the Office Depot webcam. It's a big improvement. But at any rate, that's what's happening there. And let's see, yesterday there was, yesterday was the webinar. Monday was something else. At any rate, it was, everything was crazy. Actually, it was a recording. It was a podcast recording, and it was a video podcast recording. And we had two mayors one from Huntsville, one's from Tuscaloosa, Alabama, and they were both talking about what's happening in their cities and what's going on right now. It was a good podcast. It was where we learned what we need to do next as far as video is concerned. And it's a growing process. And I'm heading back in again today as soon as I get through here with this live feed. And I've got two more to record today, and then I'll get back in here. And if I don't have time to process the podcast and get it uploaded this morning, I will get it processed sometime early in the afternoon and uploaded. And so if you're wondering where the podcast was today, podcast listener, then that means I was delayed, or there was no way I could get it done before I left. That's what it means. And we'll hopefully make that happen. Hopefully. We are living in interesting times. A lot of people are wigged out, scared, and a lot of people are scratching their heads and saying, wondering what's actually going on. Bernie Sanders, his presidential campaign, has practically vanished. Joe Biden is desperate to stay in the public eye. He's said a couple of insane things lately. But Bernie is struggling. He's really struggling. I mean, well, first off, Joe Biden, he's struggling right now. He's doing these little live things on a regular basis, and he shakes hands with his wife and asks, "Hey, where are you from?" It's just pretty bad. And then Bernie, he's struggling to stay 6 feet away from Americans' wallets. Parents are actually learning what their kids are being taught by the government education system. And they're like, what? And some parents are finding out it's not the teacher after all. Wow. So all those notes, that teacher's not the jerk, huh? Oh, that precious, perfect child. Now you actually get to see what they're really like all day long. Oh, man. And I've been occupying my time when I haven't been busy, busy, busy. I talked about YouTube videos, about what to watch. And I got some interesting responses, and I need to dig through those and find the one. There was one from Joel, my friend Joel in Hawaii, who mentioned that he's been watching this rather morbid podcast about, what was that about, Joel? Was it about murders? Anyway, he's been listening to this podcast, and I'll have to dig it up and find it for you. I watched a YouTube video yesterday when I got back to the house. I settled down. I heated up some leftovers for lunch, and I fired up YouTube and kind of decompressed for a few minutes before I came back downstairs to work on some other things to the studio. And the I watched, there's a guy whose videos I've been watching for a while, who calls himself Adam the Woo, and that name comes from a day back when he was in a band. He was the bass player in a band, and you know how the bands introduce their members, here's so-and-so, so-and-so-so, no, on the bass, Adam the Woo. And so that was, he chose that as his YouTube name years and years ago. He's been doing this for like 10 years now. And, but he had done a cross-country trip a couple of months ago with a buddy of his, and he had gone, it was roadside America. He traveled across country, not on the interstate systems, but on the by roads, and was going to all of these places you used to pass by before the interstate system pulled people away from lots of local interesting things. You know what I'm talking about, the world's largest ball of twine, the world's largest chair, things like that. But that wasn't the subject of this one. He was just going some interesting places, and he made his way to Orlando for the debut of something in Orlando at Walt Disney World, and stuck around for a couple of other things that he was interested in that were happening, and then got stuck there when the COVID-19 lockdowns started happening, and he was a little bit unsure about how to get back to L.A. He lives outside of Los Angeles, and well, he's from Orlando, lived most of his life there and moved out to Los Angeles, but he finally decided to book a flight. And he was unsure about how that was going to work out. He wasn't really unsure about driving across country and where he might get stopped and what for and whatever. So he decided to book a flight, and he took his camera along. And I watched the process as you can watch, you just look for Adam the Woo on YouTube, and you can see his most recent video is him going to the airport, getting on a plane, flying across country, and getting to LAX. So he goes into MCO in Orlando, the airport in Orlando, and it's like a dead mall. It's just completely deserted. You only see one other person in most of the shots, except for where he's waiting for his flight, and then there are six other people. If you're familiar with the Orlando airport, you know they have a monorail system that runs back and forth between a couple of sections of the airport. Well, you never ride that monorail alone. Never. You never do. It's always stuffed. It's standing room only. There was one other person on the monorail with Adam. One. And he was a pilot. He got to the gate, and he's waiting at the gate. There's six other people waiting with him at the gate. He flew from Orlando to Los Angeles on a plane with six other people. Stop and think about the times you've traveled. Maybe you have been on a plane that was half full. I've been on a plane that was maybe half full, where you could, you got the whole row to yourself, which is awesome. So you can spread out. You can put your stuff in the seat next to you and access your bag and things like that. It's awesome. He's on a plane with six other people flying from Orlando to Los Angeles, California. He gets to LAX. It's the same. It's a little busier, but it's just a wasteland compared to the normal. And the traffic. You can see the traffic as they're passing over LA. He's shooting out the window. It's really light for Los Angeles. Trust me, I've driven in LA at pretty much all times of day. It's bumper-to-bumper traffic, and at rush hour, it's a parking lot. So it doesn't matter which highway you're on. It's bumper-to-bumper traffic, and it's constantly moving, and there was not much traffic at all on the highway as they passed over in LA. Not much at all. Taxis, Uber, at both airports. The taxi lanes where they're all stacked up waiting for people? Completely empty. Nobody there. In order to get a ride, you had to open up your phone, get on the phone, call somebody, or open your Uber app. And he had to, when he got to LA, he had to summon an Uber, but in order to get an Uber, he had to take a shuttle to someplace else. So they had a lot waiting, a lot just for Uber, and they would shuttle you to the Uber lot, or the lot that Uber was using, and you'd have to go there and wait for your Uber to show up. Everything was a wasteland. It's like Wally World is closed and the moose out front didn't tell him. I mean, it's just a bizarre situation. It's just a bizarre situation. The everything is shut down. People are starting to wig out about their jobs. People are losing their jobs. Which was it? Was it Longhorn? Was that the steakhouse? I think it was Longhorn Steakhouses. They closed all their locations and laid everybody off. Shut down. Don't know if they'll reopen. I think it was Longhorn. But it's a bizarre situation in America today. Yeah, it was Longhorn. I think it was. Yeah. But what's going to happen in America as a result of this crazy situation? We can go one of two ways. We can get back at it and work hard and bounce back. We've shown we can. Because after Donald Trump became president, it was Logan's Roadhouse. That was it, Logan's Roadhouse. Donald Trump became president, we immediately began recovering from the economy that had been torpedoed by the Barack Obama administration for 8 years. Immediately things started turning around. I've told you the story in the past about a place I flew my drone. It was a subdivision that was barricaded and locked off because there's nothing built there. The streets are paved, the storm drain systems are in, but there's no houses, nothing there. A development company began working on this subdivision, and when Barack Obama was elected, they stopped. Nope, they stopped. Not going to do it. And it still hasn't come back. Nobody has gone in to start building again, even now. They may, now that things have turned around, but what I'm getting at is that the Obama administration and everything they stood for sent a very clear message to people who are wise about business and wise about the economy, and those people all pulled back. And everything suffered because they knew that the Obama administration, being the socialist progressive organization that it was going to do things which would make it impossible to do business and really make any money. So they pulled their assets back and protected themselves. After Obama was gone and Donald Trump was back in office, those people said, this guy's a savvy businessman. He knows what he's doing. We've studied his past and what he really stands for. We can trust him. And the economy spun back up again. The stock market took off. It set records. It did so quickly, very quickly. So after all this, there is a good possibility that we will bounce back, unless Democrats get control again. If Democrats get control again, their policies will torpedo our economy permanently. And because that's actually what they want. They want our economy to be completely, totally, and irrevocably controlled by a centralized government, because they passionately believe that they are intellectually superior, and it should be them who's guiding our economy. Those are the two ways things could go. I'm voting for option one. Let's let President Trump guide us back into prosperity again. It's been painful so far, but we're making adjustments. We may not agree with all of them, but we are making adjustments. If the Democrats have their way, they will fund every loony leftist program there is. The nation will finally go completely insane, and our economy will never, ever recover. Because the Democrats are incompetent. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective Podcast. Yeah, it's kind of bad out there. You got to laugh when you can, though. I firmly believe that. You have to look at the absurdity of life and appreciate it for what it is. And you can either get upset about things being absurd, or you can just enjoy it for what it is. Because really, it takes a mature mind not to be offended by the entire world. It really does. Because when you're offended, trust me, it's your fault. And here's something to laugh at. I follow comedian Jeff Allen on social media, and he copied a post from his wife. Jeff's sister-in-law is a realtor. And she posted an ad on social media and says, at the end of the quarantine, if you decide you can't stand the people you live with, just remember, I am a realtor. Oh, good for her. Life is funny, and you have to laugh at it sometimes. And then there's the patently absurd, the people who take themselves very seriously, and they are just bozos. For example, CNN's Don Lemon. He does have a flair for the dramatic. When he taxis down his moral runway and commences his dramatic takeoffs, he fills his soliloquies against conservatives, Republicans, and particularly President Donald Trump, with plaintive sighs and lengthy, rather uncomfortable pauses, during which he stares at viewers and makes faces. Dave Urbanski from over at The Blaze tells us during the Monday night program, Don Lemon berated Trump over his behavior at a White House coronavirus press briefing earlier in the day for, quote, taking time to argue with reporters and air his grievances. At issue for Trump were questions from Fox News' Kristen Fisher and ABC News' Jonathan Carl about a report from the HHS Office of the Inspector General about hospital shortages of coronavirus testing kits and medical masks. And Lemon didn't like Trump's attitude. He says, this is a president who just cannot handle the truth. A president who has to make everything about him. He needs to be praised at every second. He is so thin-skinned. A president who just loses it whenever he hears someone or something that he perceives as criticism. Gee, Don, you looked in a mirror lately. After one particular tense exchange between Trump and the media, Lemon asked, did you ever think you'd hear the President of the United States react that way, ever? I know some of you think it's cute. It's not. It's sad. It's sad. You know, I have to break here and say that people like Don Lemon are so conditioned for a certain kind of acceptable behavior from a politician that they have to be able to stand at a camera and a microphone and deliver what they have to say in a very predefined way, which cannot go outside of certain boundaries. That they can't look at a reporter and ask him, who are you working for, China? That they can't look at a reporter and say, you're probably the worst reporter there is, you'll never succeed. They can't look at a reporter and question their motivation for the question they've just asked. They can't do that. They have to be savvy politically and be able to smile and laugh and dance around the question and answer it without answering it. Because that's what happened for 8 years under Barack Hussein Obama. Remember, these people loved him, and they ignored his lawlessness. I posted something about his lawlessness, a link to a great Twitter thread about his lawlessness earlier this morning. You should go have a look on the Facebook page for that post. It's amazing. I would read it here, but it is kind of long, and it is not exactly. I need to go through it and phrase it in ways that can't actually be read here. But Don Lemon and people like him expect presidents to behave in a certain way and not to confront people. They don't want a president to confront the press. They don't want to, because the press should be allowed to do whatever the heck they want and say whatever they want. Because after all, the press is speaking truth to power. Yeah, sure they are. Their truth, their conditional, situational truth. You see, the press, the progressive press, doesn't see the world the way a rational, sane, normal person sees the world. And they don't embrace truth. They embrace whatever propels the agenda forward. And so people like Don Lemon see a president who confronts the press for something they should be confronted about. And he's angry because he's a member of the press, the progressive news media. Let me just tell you this. If President Trump had just done what previous presidents have done and answered that question without answering the question, just to satisfy the reporter, then he would not be a leader. If he had sidestepped the question or just somehow satisfied the reporter with an answer that was really, had no content, it was a non-answer, and then privately dealt with their, whoever they came from, whether it would be Fox News or ABC or whoever, if he had issued something or had one of his staff somebody on his staff talk with that broadcast organization about this person, had he done that, you would have heard about that too. There is a no-win scenario being enacted in front of us. It's playing out in front of us right now. There's no way he can win. If he plays by their rules, he's lying. If he doesn't play by their rules, he's abusive. He can't win. He might as well be true. Well, soon, Don Lemon flipped on his pause and sigh switch for viewers and had to add more drama to the mix, invoked in the name of a noted character from Network. Remember the movie, the 1970s movie, critically acclaimed? It was a movie about television news. In many ways, it's come true in the last few decades. Lemon confessed, "I have to be honest with you, for the last couple of weeks, when I walk into this building, I get in front of this camera, I swear I feel like I'm in the movie Network. I feel like Howard Beale. Americans are mad as hell. What are you going to how much more can Americans take? Every single day, berating people, lying." He added before bringing up a debunked left-wing talking point about Trump. First, the coronavirus is a hoax. Yeah, first it's a hoax. Then, all along, I knew it was serious. It was a pandemic. How much more? How many people have to die? He ended the segment by invoking the fictional newsman Howard Beale once again, saying, "Americans, are you mad as hell? How much more are you going to take?" Well, former Fox News anchor Megyn Kelly had enough. On Twitter, she posted, "CNN still pretends Lemon is an objective news anchor." Yeah, sure. "While the mainstream media recoils in horror at the bias of Fox, OANN, etc., who do they think they're kidding?" Indeed, Lemon is listed as on CNN's website as the anchor of his program, a title traditionally reserved for journalists who deliver the news with, shall we say, a bit more objectivity. DePauw University professor and media critic Jeffrey McCall told Fox News less than a year ago. He, Lemon, is a host of an opinion-driven show in which his opinions are front and center. Thus, he is a host rather than a news anchor. People who watch his show surely know all of this and are happy to hear his insights. His show does discuss news topics, but it is not designed as an objective news show. And that's something we all need to remember. Don Lemon is the host of an opinion show, exactly like Sean Hannity is the host of an opinion show on Fox News. And others on Fox News are hosts of opinion shows. There is hard news, and then there are opinion shows. Don Lemon has an opinion show. He's expressing his opinion. And oddly enough, his opinion happens to be that the President of the United States can't have an opinion if it conflicts with Don Lemon's opinion. Don Lemon is a weepy idiot. I even set up a website called it donlemonisaweepyidiot.com. I haven't done anything with it in a while. It was funny at the time. But at least Don Lemon is consistent. All right, just back up a little bit. We'll be fine, okay? Yikes! Welcome back to the Daily Perspective Podcast. Hi there. Good to have you along on this Wednesday, the 8th day of April, 2020. I don't know if you've noticed, but if you're an Amazon Prime customer, that it's no longer Amazon Prime. It's Amazon whenever we get it to you. I ordered a couple of things the other day. Hey, listen, I've been ahead of the curve on this whole isolation thing for quite a while. I've been an Amazon Prime member for years. And if I don't have to leave for anything, I don't. I mean, I enjoy getting out from time to time, but I want it to be on my terms. You know what I mean? I like going places, doing things. I'm not a social outcast. I'm not hiding in a bunker anywhere. But if I can just order something online and have it come to my door, I'm all about that, especially if I order enough stuff that the service is worth it. Trust me, it's worth it to me. And I ordered a handful of things. I got a project I'm working on, and I ordered some parts, and I'm like, oh, these will be here next weekend. It's all Prime, by the way. Every last one of them marked as Prime. And half of these parts will be here a week from Friday. And the next batch will be like 2-3 weeks behind that. It's just, I think, what was it? It was some are coming on the 14th and the others are coming on the 28th. So it's just, no, it's the first of next week and then a couple of weeks after that. So I'll have, you know, all this stuff sitting around waiting on everything to come in. It's like buying something on eBay from China. It's just craziness. Just crazy, 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 crazy. Okay. Where were we? I was on social media. I was looking at stuff in the meantime, as I always do. And I got myself distracted. Let's see here. Let me get back to where I was. Okay. Is that okay? Let's see. Where am I? Oh yeah. You want to talk about absurd? You probably already are familiar. We've talked about it. In the coronavirus stimulus package, the relief package, the Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts got $25 million. The Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts. They got $25 million in a package, from a package that was supposed to be helping the situation in America today with the coronavirus and medical needs and people out of work and needing help. And I mean, it's our money, you know? It's our money. They take it from us by force. If you don't pay it, you go to jail. That is force. If you don't pay it and you refuse, if you totally and completely refuse to cooperate, they will show up at your door with guns and haul you away. That is not an option. It's not by choice. They take it from you by force. There's no other way to look at it than that. So they take this money from you, from me, to spend on other things that we don't necessarily agree with, and then they give it to the Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts. We have hospitals in need. We have people who have lost their jobs. Logan's Roadhouse shuts down. Logan's Roadhouse. All of those people that worked for Logan's Roadhouse, they're out of business now. All of the locations are closed. They've laid everybody off. Those people, they need some help. The Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts, one place. One location, not every location nationwide, one place, one, $25 million. And they still shut down and laid everybody off. And everybody went nuts. Okay, well, then you don't get the 25 mil. Republicans started filing all this paperwork. They put into motion a process that would take that $25 million back. Well, the Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts has walked back its decision to furlough nearly 100 members of the symphony orchestra, despite receiving a $25 million federal bailout, a move that prompted the affected musicians to file a lawsuit against the Performing Arts Center. Now, what made them make the move? Was it the musicians or was it the politicians saying, "Hey, we're taking the money back"? I suspect it was the losing the money. According to the Washington Free Beacon, the center has offered the musicians pay cuts and a wage freeze instead of furloughs, and the union representing the orchestra's musicians has in turn decided to drop a lawsuit against the center for allegedly violating a contract which prohibits layoffs without 6 weeks' notice. As a result of the agreement, the Kennedy Center told the news agency that the organization will save $4 million and approximately $2.5 million in payroll through September 2020. The decision to avoid musician furloughs comes a week after lawmakers moved to revoke the center's $25 million bailout, calling the provision in the massive stimulus package frivolous spending, as the Daily Wire previously reported. Some in Washington, Congressman Brian Steele, a Republican from Wisconsin, says some in Washington felt it was important to spend $25 million of taxpayer dollars $25 million of taxpayer dollars on the Kennedy Center when there are obviously bigger needs right now. This is frivolous spending in the midst of a national emergency. Coronavirus requires a serious and targeted response. Minority Whip Steve Scalise of Louisiana, Republican, says if an organization is receiving assistance from the federal government, we expect them to take care of their workers. As we take further congressional action to fight the coronavirus's devastating impact on families and our economy, I call on Speaker Pelosi to finally put the American people, not special interests, first. Scalise was in an interview with Fox News and said, while everybody else was working together, Republican and Democrat, with President Trump, who was solely focused on fighting for jobs for American families, Nancy Pelosi literally held up the bill for days to get her pet projects, including the money for the Kennedy Center. Now, President Trump has supported the bailout, arguing that he didn't have a big problem with it because the center has tremendous deficits that are built up. He said, according to The Hill, I haven't spent time there because I'm far too busy. I'd love to go there evenings, but I'm too busy doing things. The Kennedy Center, they do a beautiful job, an incredible job. In addition to the buzz over the stimulus bailout, an online rumor has been circulating that the Kennedy Center donated $5 million to the DNC. The source of that original claim, according to the Daily Caller, appears to be a viral tweet where the poster then clarified that the statement was intended as a next step hypothetical. Not that it actually happened. A spokesman for the center told the Daily Caller that the DNC has made no donations, or the center has made no donations to the DNC. The news agency reports that as a 501c3 nonprofit, the Kennedy Center is prohibited from making political donations, at least on paper, up front, over the table. Oh, my. So the Kennedy Center gets 25 mil. The Republicans pitch a fit, and the public finds out. And then they kind of back off and negotiate with the union to change things a bit. They're already apparently in the hole. Doesn't this sound familiar? It's a 501c3, a nonprofit that gets funding from the government. It's in the hole. And the progressives in government want to keep it alive. Just the way they keep the post office alive and they keep Amtrak alive. Does it bother you like it bothers me that there are many organizations, many entities which exist in our nation, which could not survive without our tax dollars? They can't support themselves. They can't stand on their own. And the government takes money from us by force, takes money from us, and gives it to these organizations so they can survive. Let's just take one, for example. I mentioned it a moment ago. The post office. Have you ever been in a post office on your lunch break? For whatever reason, you have to use the post office and you have to go in. Let's say you have to pay postage on something to return it. Like I did. Early last week, I had to go in and pay postage on two packages to return to Amazon sellers. Because, as I've stated before, we buy as much as we can online. And we also shop. I mean, we do. We do the Walmart thing. We frequent local businesses and the like. But if it's possible, I'm hitting Amazon. Well, let me tell you. I have to go into the post office and buy postage for two packages to send them back. Which, one, irritated me to begin with because it was all Amazon Prime. And I got to pay postage to send it back. That bugged me. And then two, I've been into the post office, and you have as well, I'm pretty sure, on your lunch break, as I have in the past, because you've got to, I don't care if it's you've got to buy some stamps or whatever. You have business, and you can only do it at the post office. So on your lunch break, you get the brilliant idea. Oh, I'll just swing by the post office while I'm out for lunch. I'll either do it on the way to grab lunch or on the way back to work from lunch, zip in, buy the stamps, mail the envelope, whatever, zip out, back to whatever I got to do. And you get there during the lunch hour, during lunchtime. How many windows are open? Yeah, one. There's one window open and you can hear conversations going on in the background. There are other people there. There are other people working. But there's only one window open. And the line, and this is not an exaggeration, I have seen the line wind around the lobby and out the door to that particular part. You know, they'll have a, in many cases, they'll have a separate section. The post office boxes are in a different place, and the counter where you go do business is in a different place, and there's usually a glass wall and a door, and you go through the door to get into where you've got to do business with the people at the counter. The line is stacked up out the door at lunchtime with people who had the same idea you did. Hey, I'll just go on my lunch break. And it hasn't happened just once. It's happened to me many times. Well, nowadays, since I do all my business from here, it's not such a big issue. I can take a break and go whenever I need to. When I went the other day, one other vehicle in the parking lot, and that guy was coming out as I went in. I was in the post office alone. But the post office still exists and takes our money. And it's in the red every year. Billions in the red every year. It can't compete in the real world. Even when they're taking your money away from you and giving it to them. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective. Really great having you along today. Thank you so much for joining the fun. I'm going to cut things a little bit short today. I was hoping to do the full thing. I got one more story, and then we're going to move along because I've got I have to be someplace. During that last segment, I got a phone call. So schedules change. So I'm going to wrap this up as quickly as I can and then move along and wish you a good day, because stuff happens. It is a beautiful day in the neighborhood. If you like rain, we've got a lot of it here. It's washing the pollen out of the air, and I'm all for it. And there's some people I'd like to wash out of politics, to be honest with you. You heard about Bill de Blasio, right? Mayor of New York. He told everybody what to do. You've got to stay inside. Edicts that everybody had to stay inside, had to social distance, had to do all these things. And then he goes to the gym. When nobody else can, he goes to the gym. Because he is a member of the elite. He is important. It's necessary. Well, I'm important. I have to go. You need me to go. Well, Democrat mayor of Chicago, Lori Lightfoot, said late last month that the growing coronavirus outbreak is serious. It's deadly serious. And we have to take it seriously. All of us. I personally have been concerned about what I've seen in our parks. People playing basketball. She said this during a news conference. And what I've seen along our lakefront. Way too many people gathering like it's just another day. This is not just another day. To that end, city officials warned that social distancing violators could be fined $500. And then they could be arrested. We've seen left-wing elected officials getting quite perturbed over citizens failing to recognize their own newfound power, resulting in actions and tones that seem to be coming from exasperated parents as opposed to governors and mayors. Well, add Lightfoot's name to the list. She's appearing to invoke the famously parental maxim, you know, do as I say, not as I do, on top of everything. See, one of Illinois' social distancing stipulations, like other states operating in this way, is that non-essential businesses are supposed to be shut down. You know this is true wherever you live. Among them, barbershops and hair salons. But Lightfoot got a haircut over the weekend and defended doing so. Monday, she says, I'm practicing social distancing. The woman who cut my hair had a mask and gloves on, so I'm practicing what I'm preaching. We're trying to do everything we can to emphasize the messages around social distancing, washing your hands, staying at home, but as an elected official in the public face of the city, I need to make sure that I'm out there and visible through this crisis. Now, the report coming from WBBM included an image of Kashmir Neal's Facebook post thanking Mayor Lightfoot for letting her cut her hair Sunday. And as opposed to a safe social distance of 6 feet, it appears they're standing just inches apart. I would also add that she's not wearing gloves. Neither one of them are wearing gloves or masks. The Chicago Tribune reported that when Lightfoot was asked a follow-up question about the issue, that included a reference to a public service announcement in which she says, quote, getting your roots done is not essential, end quote, the mayor became visibly annoyed. She says, I'm the public face of this city. I'm on national media, and I'm out in the public eye. I'm a person who, I take my personal hygiene very seriously. As I said, I felt like I needed to have a haircut. I'm not able to do that myself, so I got a haircut. You want to talk more about that? Socialist Alderman Carlos Ramirez Rosa, a frequent Lightfoot critic, blasted the mayor's explanation for the haircut, saying she is under no obligation to look good on national TV. She is under no obligation to book national interviews, but she is under an obligation to follow and promote social distancing in order to save lives. He tweets and goes on to say, this is a bad example for our city. And a lot of other people had similar things to say. A progressive politician, once again, showing us that they truly do believe that they are both intellectually and morally superior to everyone else. It's necessary. Well, let me just say to Mayor Lightfoot, if I may, I'm a lot like you guys. Guys, I'm talking to you right now. Girls, not so much. Girls, you know that if your hair gets longer, you just have longer hair. Unless it's colored, then people start to see what your hair, what your true hair color actually is. Something my wife is going through right now. Guys, your head gets bigger. Your hair is getting bigger. This is something I'm going through every day right now. I've had the girl that cuts my hair, she's canceled on me twice. She's postponed once and then just said, I've just got to cancel until we know what's going on. My answer? I have a stack of baseball caps. I'll pick one out. I'll wear a baseball cap. I'll be good. Because after a certain point, for the guys, the hair just gets huge. It's just like, it gets ragged, gets shaggy. It all doesn't grow at the same rate. So the style that you had, the haircut you had, looks kind of wonky. It's hard to get it tamed. It's hard, you know, it's just weird. So you wear a baseball cap. So Mayor, if you're going to show solidarity with the people, you're really going to be a leader, then wear a baseball cap. That's my suggestion to you. Because what you're accomplishing right now is not leadership. It's dictatorship. But then again, you are a progressive. So that should come naturally to you. And that's all I have to say about that. Have a great day. God bless you. I hope things are going well for you. And I hope you'll join me again tomorrow for the Thursday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Wish I could stay longer, but I got to bolt. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
We're done.